From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Good afternoon. With the Juneau School District facing a projected $9.5 million deficit, the school board has started discussing budget cuts. As KTOO's Katie Anassis reports, the district superintendent presented a list of immediate changes at a meeting last night.
Superintendent Frank Hauser says the district needs to cut about 10% of its budget.
With the magnitude of this problem and these numbers, I don't believe it's possible any longer for the district to make small targeted cuts to address these huge numbers.
But targeted cuts is where he's starting. So far, Hauser's list includes a hiring freeze, limiting travel, and reducing summer school offerings, a small slice of the $9.5 million deficit.
These are rough saving estimates of approximately $350,000. I actually have a goal of identifying $1 million in savings to enact before June 30th.
Hauser also outlines several broader changes the board could consider, like increasing class sizes or consolidating schools, though he warned that closing schools could also cost the district state funding. From there, Hauser says, the district could start thinking about more targeted cuts. That could include eliminating certain positions, like librarians, counselors, nurses, and office staff. Board member David Noon, a professor at the University of Alaska Southeast, said he understood how district employees might be feeling. Governor Mike Dunleavy proposed major budget cuts for the university system in 2019.
Those of us who work there spent 6 months in a kind of continual panic over the future of our positions. And I know there are a lot of people watching this meeting right now who are also concerned about the future of their employment with the district.
Even with major cuts, the district won't be able to close its budget gap in 1 year. Hauser said the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development is giving the district 5 years to address the deficit. But the district will still be required to pass a balanced budget. Hauser said the district could consider taking out a loan. That would require approval from the state. And Board Finance Committee Chair Will Muldoon says the district would still need to address its underlying budget challenges.
Even if the agreement with Deed does work out, it does not change the size of the deficit. It just changes the size of the runway that we have to land this issue.
The school board and district leaders will continue discussing budget cuts in the coming weeks. The board's finance committee will meet on Thursday at 12 p.m. on Zoom. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Debates over education funding dominated as lawmakers gathered in Juneau yesterday for the start of this year's legislative session. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Republican from Kodiak, says a boost to the base per student funding known as the Base Student Allocation, or BSA, is a top priority for his caucus.
We took the lead on funding education and certainly support a BSA increase. But right at this point, we're awaiting here from the House what their plans are.
Last year, the Senate passed a bill that would have boosted base per student public school funding by $1,000. After negotiations with the House, the legislature settled on a one-year funding increase equivalent to roughly $680. And that was ultimately cut in half in a veto by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Stevens says many members of his caucus would support overriding the veto. House Minority Leader Calvin Scroggie, an Anchorage Democrat, called on his colleagues to do so.
And I think what we've heard from many loud and clear is that education is in crisis in Alaska.
Three rural Democrats and independents in the Republican-led majority caucus split with their colleagues to vote in favor. House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Republican from Wasilla, says her caucus doesn't believe it should focus on a one-time funding boost.
We are looking at a solution to put forward for public education in the full umbrella of what that looks like and not just laser focused on a one-time increase.
Education is one of many issues lawmakers have on their agendas this year. Tilton says her caucus also hopes to advance bills to reduce the cost of energy and bolster public safety. On the Senate side, Stevens says legislators are eyeing reforms of the state's retirement system. The session is expected to continue through mid-May. The U.S. Supreme Court today heard a case brought by a small boat fisherman on the East Coast. They object to a federal requirement that they have to pay to have observers on board. Alaskans who work in federally regulated fisheries have a lot at stake in the case, but for reasons that have nothing to do with fisheries observers or even the ocean. As Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports, the case could loosen federal regulation across the board.
We'll hear argument first this morning in case 22-12-19, Relentless versus the Department of Commerce.
For a case brought by Atlantic herring fishermen rooted in the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the nation's foremost fishing law, fish were barely mentioned. Lawyers and the justices referred much more to an oil company.
Chevron deference?
Chevron deference.
Chevron.
Chevron.
Which is Chevron.
Chevron deference was a standard the court established in a 1984 case, and overturning it is the true aim of the herring case. Chevron deference stands for the principle that if it's not clear what Congress meant when it passed a particular law, judges should give deference to the government agency's view, as long as that view is reasonable. Chevron is the backbone of federal regulation, whether it's an agency enforcing an environmental restriction, an aviation rule, or policing any of the other industries the feds regulate. Attorney Roman Martinez, representing the Atlantic herring fishermen, says Chevron deference means legal challenges are always tilted to favor the government. He says it takes away the authority of a judge to decide who has the better interpretation of a law.
I think deference becomes problematic when it requires a judge to say that the law means X, when really the judge thinks the law means Y.
Martinez argued in harmony with Justice Neil Gorsuch. Gorsuch says it's a question of who decides. Should a judge decide based on the strength of each side's argument, Gorsuch asks?
Or does the judge abdicate that responsibility and say automatically whatever the agency says wins?
Right. Even if the judge is not persuaded.
But Mrs.
Justice Elena Kagan says that's not how Chevron deference works. She says a judge uses all tools available to glean congressional intent, the letter of the law, the context, the legislative history. And if there's still ambiguity, Kagan says it only makes sense to defer to the agency, because they're subject matter experts. They know the facts on the ground. And unlike judges, agencies are at least accountable to an elected president. Kagan asked what happens when disputes arise over highly technical matters like artificial intelligence.
Will courts be able to decide these issues as to things they know nothing about? Courts that are completely disconnected from the policy process, from the political process, and, you know, that just don't have any expertise and experience in an area, or are people in agencies going to do that? That's what this case is about.
The term fishing or fisherman was uttered only a handful of times over 2 hours, and at-sea observers, hardly at all. Sitka-based fisherman Linda Bankin is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, representing small boat commercial harvesters of halibut and other federally regulated species. She says fishermen she knows have their own gripes about the observer program. But Bankin's emphasis is on sustainable fisheries, and she does not feel aligned with the Atlantic herring fishermen who brought the case to dump the Chevron doctrine.
Sounds like there's a pretty deliberate attempt to dismantle federal agencies and their authority to manage resources. And yes, that causes me some concern.
A roster of conservatives and anti-regulation advocates wrote friend of the court briefs arguing to end Chevron deference. They include the Goldwater Institute, Gun Owners of America, the vaping industry, and 18 states, including Alaska, through State Attorney General Treg Taylor. Those who weighed in to support regulation include the American Cancer Society, the Environmental Defense Fund, and a quartet of Democratic senators. A decision is expected by early July. Reporting from the Supreme Court, I'm Liz Ruskin.